Hello, this is Sean Martin, editor-in-chief for ITSP Magazine, and you are very welcome to a new episode of At the Edge here on ITSP Radio. Today I'm joined by two InfoSec veterans that have held a variety of leadership roles and are now leading and managing a fund at Clear Sky Ventures. Please welcome Jay Leek and Patrick Heim to the show. I'm thrilled to get a slice of their time to ask some hard questions and to get a view of their world as they try to figure out which investments to make, why, and why not. Paraphrasing Jay in this conversation, it's hard to get informed with investments. It's not obvious. Today's episode is brought to you by our At the Edge sponsor, EdgeScan. EdgeScan is a software-as-a-service-based solution that combines advanced technology with consulting expertise to reduce risk, reduce cost, and help ensure the deployment of secure applications, cloud platforms, and hosting environments. To the team at EdgeScan, we are grateful for your support. Jay and Patrick shine the light on a ton of stuff in this episode. Listen in to get their individual and combined views on investment strategies, investment buzzwords, and the categorization of the four types of security companies and how these categories impact investment decisions. Jay and Patrick even share some advice for their organizations making attempts to consume some of these innovative products. Similar to Jay's point of view for investments, it's not always obvious to the consumer either. Listen in and enjoy. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And of course, you are both with Clear Sky, and I'm interested to hear what you're up to as a firm, and certainly interested in what you've been up to individually as well. And today, we're going to be looking at the state of the market from a venture capital perspective, investment perspective, kind of where things were, where they're headed, what's going on. Before we dig in, though, a little bit about each of you first, just kind of set the tone for folks of who they're hearing from. And Patrick, we'll start with you.
Sure. Patrick Heim, longtime security guy, over 20-some-odd years, joined Clear Sky almost 2 years ago now as an investor, investing in security companies. I'll let Jay give the background into the firm. But prior to that, I was in security leadership roles for Dropbox, Salesforce, Kaiser Permanente, and McKesson. So done the big CISO gigs for quite a while. Also did a few startup companies in the security space, building product and lots of auditing, consulting, pen testing, you name it, earlier in my career as well. Absolutely love security, and like to think that I've now seen it from virtually every angle from being on the investing side now. And really enjoy everything I do. Jay?
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. Yeah, similar to Patrick, I got an operating background where I ran various portions of security programs for Nokia and Equifax and Blackstone over about an 18-year period. And also was leading the venture investing off the balance sheet of Blackstone for a number of years. We started Clear Sky about 2 years ago, actually 2 years ago today, January 3rd, 2017. And, since starting Clear Sky, if you look at number of investments that we've made, or you look at absolute dollars that we've deployed, when you think about it from an early stage security investment strategy, we're probably the most active investors in cybersecurity today. We've invested in 15 companies and deployed a sizable amount of capital into those companies. So, you know, one of the things that we do a little different is, as Patrick said, and he's a former security officer, me as a former security officer, you know, we really think about things through the eye of the CISO, having bought hundreds of millions of dollars of security technology and deployed it, some successfully, some unsuccessfully over the years. You know, we know a lot of the pain that our colleagues are going through, having been in the shoes, and I think it gives us a little bit different lens and perspective as we evaluate and think about our investments in our fund.
Yeah, and it's a pleasure having you both on the show today. I'm very interested in this conversation, and I'm going to ask this the first question, and it might be a little poking and prodding, and it's it's a title I put together for this episode, not knowing exactly where we would head with it, but outside looking in, one could question whether investments are being made for return's sake, or are they actually being made with the goal of helping the industry succeed? In other words, are investors putting money in solely for the purpose of getting a return on their investment, or do folks like yourself have a view of doing a good job for the industry to actually help companies succeed? I know there's a balance there, but I'm interested in your perspective and then maybe perhaps a view of the VC market as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak for ClearSky specifically first, and let Patrick chime in, of course. But I mean, Patrick and I have been on the operating side of the house for 18 to 20 years each. You know, we have put together a CISO board of advisors, I think that's unmatched in the industry. And a lot of this is through 5, 10, 20 years of relationships. And, you know, and as we introduce our companies to other security officers and, you know, as potential prospects for them to consider, you know, every time we do that, Patrick and I, or anyone else on the team for that matter, but largely falls on our shoulders, are putting our name and our reputation on the line. And, you know, we hold that to the highest standards possible. And that's, you know, that's in the DNA of the firm that was already being done in ClearSky before we started security. We have a totally different track, and it's called Power and Technology. And our partners who've been around for a lot longer in that track have been doing very similar things. And, you know, and it's something that's extremely important to us that, you know, we, as we make investments, that we're building companies for the long haul, as we think about exits, which are inevitable in the venture world, that we think about a good home for the company, for the customers, you know, and that we do everything we can to try to make the full experience, both with us as a, one of our portfolio companies and post us, you know, as good and pleasant and beneficial, you know, as we would want if we were still running security for a Fortune 500 company. I don't know, Patrick, if you want to chime in.
Yeah. No, I couldn't have said it better. I would add the question itself, you know, which is basically, hey, are you guys out there just to make money or also to change the world from a security perspective? I think that's kind of a false dichotomy. I think what we're looking for is both. Like Jay mentioned, that if we invest in a company, it gets our juices flowing. We are excited as operators that the companies that we're investing in are solving fundamental problems. They're transformative. They're doing something incredibly innovative. They're working on big problems. Whatever it is, it really has to get us excited as first and foremost as security practitioners. And then, of course, yes, you know, we need to make sure that there's a relevant market there that we can actually make money on it for our investors as well. So it's not an either or. It really is an and condition. We're trying to do both.
You know, and you make a really good point, Patrick, that we actually spend a lot of our time advising other companies, other security officers, security teams, you know, about various technologies and solutions to manage, you know, whatever portion of their cybersecurity information security program that they need. And I would say we spend more time advising on companies probably we don't have investments in than we do even on ones we do. Don't take it out of context, you know, but we've made 15 investments out of our fund since we started it 2 years ago. And the average Fortune 500 company has, you know, 60, 70 plus technologies. So naturally, there's a lot of great companies out there that we don't have an investment in. And there's also interesting companies that might be really, really good from a customer perspective, but yet it's more of a lifestyle business. It's not a venture-backed business, you know, that we don't make investments in that we might still even recommend. So from our perspective, you know, I feel like we're making the world a safer place because we're finding good ideas, innovative ideas that, you know, if it wasn't for us or firms like ours, you know, they might not get funded and they might not go anywhere, you know, but yet if we're there to fund them and help the company survive, you know, and introduce them to a lot of customers, you know, we can bring new capabilities to the market that, you know, might not otherwise have access to capital, you know, and make the world a safer place. I mean, maybe that's a little bit of a stupid way of thinking of it, but I do think that we're casting a very wide net to better secure, you know, Fortune 500, Global 2000, whomever it may be that our companies are serving.
Yeah, and very well put from both of you. And the reason I ask the question is twofold. And one is just from an outside perspective looking in, that there's so much tech, so many investments, and yet still things are still failing. Someone could say the investments are being made purely to hopefully something wins and they cash out regardless of what the impact has on in terms of mitigating risk and managing.
It's a good question, and there is a lot of there's smart money, and then there's I would call it stupid money or not smart money, right? But there's right. a lot of uninformed investors out there who want to put capital work in this sector because it's quote unquote a hot sector. You know, I would say that one of the things when we started Clear Sky Security that was important in our culture, you know, is that we don't have the traditional VC. A mentality of for every 10 investments, five of them can go to zero, you know, a couple singles and doubles, a home run or two, and I might make my returns for my investors and move on. Effectively, if we have that mentality, then that means whenever I'm sitting in front of a CEO and he's thinking about taking money from me, that he has a 50% chance of going to zero, and I'm okay and sleep well at night knowing that. Like, that's a completely flawed model, if you ask me, particularly in security, because every single one of the customers that he or she services, you know, then is eventually going to have a company that's going to just disappear. And it might be important to their security framework, and it's going to put their company at risk. And I'm not saying that we're going to have home runs, or I'm not saying that we're not going to have issues come up with companies from time to time. I mean, it's the nature of the game, but we definitely do a lot of tech diligence, and we do a lot of work to try to prevent that from happening.
Yeah,
and it's really important to the culture of our firm, at least.
Yeah, and
let me chime in on that.
Oh, go ahead, please, Patrick.
Let me chime in on that as well. I would say one of the things that maybe Sean you're trying to get at as well is that there's a lot of complexity in the market right now, and I'm not quite sure when I stopped counting. I think I gave up when there are over 3,000 companies in the security space, and we just say, yeah, there's 3,000 companies, but new ones coming all the time, and it's kind of like a tale of two cities, the best of times and it's the worst of times, in the sense that, you know, never have we seen so much interest in funding new security innovation. And that's phenomenal. Those resources are available to support entrepreneurs. But it's also a bit of the worst of times, because from a buyer's perspective, it's become incredibly noisy and cluttered when you have thousands of companies competing for basically the eyes and the ears of the same set of buyers. So we try to help. I mean, again, from the operating side and having been CISOs and buyers for quite a long period of time, we're hoping the perspectives that we bring are going to help us make smarter investment decisions that really cut out some of the noise.
Yeah, exactly. And the other part of the reason I asked the question to lead off with is nobody wants to be viewed as a negative influence in the market, but the actions behind their investments speak louder than the investment itself. And I think knowing both of you and where you came from and what you've been involved in and the work that you've done in the industry, I can say that I've seen you do more than just investments. To your point that you both made, you advise companies, you advise other startups, and you advise the buyers of these technologies beyond just your portfolio. And I also know that, and specifically, Jay, with your previous work, that you actually also eat your own dog food, right? You're using these technologies as well as helping them grow and advising on them within the market. So I think my point is actions speak louder than words. And I'm curious, both your perspective on the state of the venture space. Are there more folks that have the same mentality as you, or there is it just flooded with people looking to get a quick buck?
I would say there's a lot of companies out there that, you know, if we think about the breakdown of the 3,000 companies Patrick referred to, we'll put them into like, you know, four different buckets. I won't go into the lengthy detail of what those four buckets are, but on the far left hand side, is the product feature bucket. These are companies that are being funded as standalone companies when in reality they're just features of something bigger. And, you know, we estimate that that's probably about 80% of the market, maybe even more. In Israel, I would say it's 90 to 95% of the market. And so these are really, and they're being funded as standalone companies when in reality, like there's something, part of something bigger, they shouldn't be funded individually. But it's very confusing. Like a lot of times the investors, the founders, and even the early adopter customers don't realize it's a feature. But the mainstream buyer looks at it and goes, I would like to have it, but only if it's part of Palo Alto or something bigger. Like it's a feature to me. I won't pay for it individually. And so they get a few million of ARR and they plateau and they can't figure out why they can't grow the business to be something bigger unless they innovate themselves and kind of do something more than what they're doing today. And I wouldn't say like that's where I think a lot of the money's going into it, is what's created so many different companies when people are getting confused about this. And I'm not saying we'll never make that mistake, but we spend a lot of time in due diligence, a lot of time on technical kicking the tires. We create a ton of sales pipeline for our prospective investments throughout our due diligence process by introducing them to CISOs of major organizations, you know, to try to really, really understand this and understand also that, you know, this is on high enough on the priority list where it's going to get attention in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months or whatever it may be, relative to other priorities. And I think that's just something that other firms can definitely do. But they often run into an issue where they do, a lot of firms do that by calling customers. And what they might not realize is they're calling an early adopter customer who has a burning need for that feature. But they don't have mainstream customers to call where they would get feedback that, no, it's not a priority to me, you know? And so it gets confusing. And so I think it's not that like people are stupid or dumb or they're careless or they're just trying to make investments for investment's sake. It's that, you know, it's hard to get informed in this area. Like Patrick and I have been doing this for a long time, and we really struggle sometimes to figure this out ourselves. It's not obvious. And I can think of a number of companies, you know, like we've done 15 investments and we've looked at close to 1,500 companies. Like it's about 1% of the companies that we meet with that we end up investing in. But I can think of a ton of examples off the top of my head where we were excited about it. I mean, we geeked out of the technology. The problem was real. You know, we think it's going to be an amazing investment. The valuation wasn't crazy, you know, and then we go do a market test and we get mixed feedback and it's all over the place. And, you know, and it's really, really difficult. And we end up passing ultimately on it because, you know, it just doesn't check the right box that it's really a standalone company and it's really also a priority in the near future. So I don't know. That's how I would kind of frame up a lot of these, I'll call it uninformed dollars, but these dollars that are coming into the market that are just kind of, I don't know, they didn't have the ability or take the time or know how to go and understand really what they're investing in. So they made an investment they thought was sound and it just might not be playing out to the way they expected.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd also, you know, earlier, I think we challenged the intent of some of these investors. It's like, well, look, every investor wants to make sure they have a return on it. But I would say I haven't seen any that have a negative intent, you know, but it is what Jay is saying. Basically, there is a huge amount of complexity if you're going to invest in this very crowded market with many, you know, great innovation that's out there, but sometimes innovation isn't good enough. It's a function of market timing. It's a function of, is this really a product or a feature, as Jay mentioned, and can the team execute? I mean, is this really a team that can take this innovation, even if it's great innovation, and grow a real company in a highly competitive environment?
And I'm curious how, there's certainly a place for that level of innovation, right? So I'm curious, where does that innovation take place? Where should it take place? Does it remain as a startup venture funded thing, or does it really, really belong within large companies that either fund skunk work projects or perhaps even have a fund to kind of bring that well-informed view of what's needed to this space?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the balance of VC versus corporate funding things.
Yeah, I don't know if corporate funding really, like maybe homegrown or something like that's fine, but I think there's a place for a feature. And we've looked at a bunch of companies over, you know, the years that it started off as a feature and it developed into a standalone company, you know, and it actually had a real product then that would survive on its own and people would think about it on its own and it took time. You know, I would say the difference is like, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, you know, that a feature is where you think about, you know, angels coming in and earlier stage investors, and you see the investors coming in, like a little bit less institutional capital. You know, by the time you get to a venture, to a VC fund, you're thinking about institutionalized capital, like, you know, you need to kind of have figured out how this is going to be a real standalone company. That's our line in the sand. Other venture funds might think about it differently, but that's how we think about it differently, where we think about it. And so, you know, I just think there's definitely a need though for these concepts, these ideas, these features, as we said, to get funded. It's dangerous whenever people think that they're funding a standalone company and it's really not a standalone company. It's like, it might very well grow into one over time, but that's luck rather than like making an informed decision the way you think that you just made.
I wouldn't want to denigrate feature companies. I think they do like kickstart a lot of innovation. But I think, like Jay said, that when we look at what do we want to invest in, it is companies that are built for the long run, that are going to be platforms that are going to be able to stand by themselves. But, you know, clearly we've seen a number of great feature companies either grow into being platform companies or go through the acquisition cycle. And I think that's, you know, if we look at the security marketplace as a whole, I think it's been compared to the, you know, biomedicine marketplace, where the R&D isn't done in-house by large companies anymore. It really is the small startups, the feature companies that are trying to solve very specific problems. But, you know, quite frankly, with an eye towards an early exit, towards an early acquisition.
What I'm curious from an investment perspective is are there any things that have been hot buzzword based investments that have succeeded? Are there areas that have maybe been overhyped? First one that comes to mind is blockchain, right? And I've been involved with this early on as a technology and understanding how to take the technology to solve a problem. And now everything blockchain wise seems to be primarily around cryptocurrency, but with some ideas of how to make it something that's feasible to solve business problems as well. Are there buzzwords or technologies like that that are really hype, or are there actually places for them? And what have you seen success wise or failure wise in terms of how you look at things?
Since you mentioned blockchain, I mean, it's phenomenally interesting technology, but the signal to noise ratio, when we look at the number of companies out there, is extraordinarily bad because it's been hyped up so much and there is maybe uninformed money out there. There are a slew of companies that are blockchain this and blockchain that. But when we really peel it back, we look at, well, what's the problem that the blockchain technology is trying to solve? And can it be solved in a simpler and easier or more traditional way? And more often than not, the answer is, yeah, you know, it's really the incremental value of the blockchain technology itself to a security problem is pretty minimal. And the market isn't ready for it, et cetera. So, you know, clearly, I think blockchain is a great example of a lot of companies trying to jump on the buzzword bandwagon to capitalize on something when the underlying value proposition in the market really isn't there. There are some areas, though, where if we look at blockchain, such as, you know, maybe in the identity space, there are some really interesting applied use cases for blockchain. But again, you know, we need to look at it very carefully from a market timing perspective, which is, you know, beyond the technology and the promise of the future, is this something that people are actually going to spend money on?
Yeah, I think the other area, if you lined up, you know, 10 security companies or 100 security companies, to even make it more, emphasize this point more, 99 out of 100 of them would talk about their analytics, ML, and AI strategy. And the one that didn't just forgot about it because they probably started yesterday and they missed that part of the pitch. You know, so everybody's got some story around ML, AI, and analytics. And I would say, like, the vast majority of the companies out there, though, if you were to take the ML, AI, analytics out of the tech, it probably doesn't change. It's probably not a massive differentiator in how it's really functioning. But whenever you find a company that is using ML, AI, or analytics in a very differentiated way, and it actually is core to the problem they're solving, it's massively, massively disruptive. But it's really, really hard to diagnose that and figure that out. you know, and to test and evaluate it. We spend a lot of time on that. But I'd say it's way overhyped. Everybody's got a story around it for sure, because they have to. It's just the differentiation, you know, for how it's being applied is still, I'd say, in the infancy as we look at the market as a whole.
So let me add on to that a little bit. I think you're absolutely right, Jay. And I think what we're seeing is AI and ML is becoming a feature of a larger value proposition versus kind of a standalone. But the product category, which used to be very hot a few years ago, you know, we suck in all of your log signal intelligence, et cetera, and then we're going to find the needles in the needle stack for advanced attackers and dramatically increase the performance of the limited folks you have in your SOC. You know, that category is still alive and well, but I would say the net new rate of companies coming into that category has slowed down dramatically, which is a good thing, because there were, I think last time I looked, I was tracking over 50 or 60 companies that are in that specific space. So it's hyper competitive. And, you know, the vast majority of those companies will likely not survive in the long run. The other areas that I'm seeing a lot of interest in, and this comes from previewing kind of the Innovation Sandbox submissions for the RSA contest. I'm lucky enough to be a judge again this year. We're seeing a trend towards two different areas specifically. One of them is privacy and data protection in the kind of like regulatory privacy context, like GDPR and beyond. And there's been a real recognition that we now live in an era that, you know, quite frankly, the handling of customer data and PII, the loosey-goosey way we've been handling, I should say, in the past, that time period is over. We need to take strict accountability for knowing what the data is, where it is, how it's being handled, and that there's process maturity around the handling of PII. So we're seeing a number of companies in this space. You know, we invested in last year in Big ID, which is doing phenomenally well, but now we're seeing other companies trying to address the data discovery, data lifecycle management, and privacy challenges. That's a really interesting up-and-coming area. Another one is all around identity, you know, and we said it last year, I think identity is sexy again, but, you know, it ties somewhat to privacy as well. But when we think about identity, the area specifically in that where I'm seeing a lot of interesting new companies is in the space of authentication, trying to get beyond passwords, lots of really interesting schemes for really eliminating the password without creating any additional friction for the users. So these are companies targeting push notification capabilities or other things, trying to tie in biometrics, cell phone, et cetera. So there's a huge amount of innovation in that space, which is trying to eliminate, in my mind, one of the single biggest points of risk right now when we actually, you know, pull back from incidents, which is that, you know, passwords are easy to be stolen using malware, phishing, whatnot, basically. And it's quite frankly, you know, passwords have been the weakest link for a long time. So I'm actually quite excited to see that there's a lot of innovation and excitement and a lot of new companies trying to figure out at large scale how to eliminate passwords.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'll add, I know we're getting short on time, Sean, but is that, you know, companies, there's a lot of quote unquote cloud security companies that are out there. And we think that's for the most part, like a flawed way of thinking about it. It's that companies don't move to the cloud, they're moving to the cloud, and they likely will be moving to the cloud for the rest of our careers, regardless of how old you are today. Assuming you weren't born in the cloud and your company's probably more than 10 or 15 years old. And there's just this hangover of legacy, right? And so, you know, there is a massive need right now for hybrid cloud capabilities and security to be able to support hybrid cloud rather capabilities in your security program, where you don't have to have one stack for your on-prem and another stack for in the cloud, you know, and just a lot of vendors that were built for being on-prem have now quote unquote ported into the cloud, but having your platform run as a VM in AWS does not mean that you're now have a cloud solution. You know, we need to be able to take advantage of all of the benefits that your cloud environment offers you, as well as make sure that it extends itself to being on-prem. So we're laser focused on trying to fill in those gaps right now for supporting that moving to the cloud, that perpetual hybrid state that you're going to be in, and trying to provide capabilities to organizations so they can have one stack, regardless of where their applications may be.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up cloud. That was one of the things I was going to ask about as well. It seemed to maybe not as well, certainly still very, very relevant, but it was very, very hot a few years back for sure.
And it's nascent. It's a nascent market right now. What I just said to you, I mean, most of the cloud vendors that are out there, you know, are providing visibility. And, you know, it was a massive people shortage, as everybody knows right now. And what's a visibility tool? It requires people to run it, right? So, you know, we made an investment in a company called CloudNux last year. It's the first company that we know of that, A, is hybrid, but B, is trying to prevent the problem from happening. So taking a prevention-first focus on addressing, you know, issues around your on-prem or hybrid cloud environments, you know, and then failing back when prevention doesn't work to detect and respond instead, you know, and we think that's also a very important mindset to have in your program because we know everyone has a talent shortage.
Yeah, maybe the talent conversation could be another one that we can have later because I think there's plenty to talk about there as well. I wanted to touch on one more thing before I get to kind of like the final push question I have. But going back to the feature company versus a product company, and I would say there you might have a little more to elaborate on this, but there are two different types of products. There's a standalone product and then a service product. For example, your password piece that you mentioned, Patrick, is something that could likely run throughout a number of different things and could be used as a service across an entire organization versus an AV product, which is a standalone product. And then there are solutions, which may include either multiple products and service-like products and also services themselves led by people. So I'm wondering where investments are being made along that spectrum. I don't know if there are more points along that spectrum to define, but are they made, is most of it being made in feature innovation or are we seeing standalone products? Are we seeing service-like investments or, and the other thing I'm really interested in is the idea of solution, because as you said, everybody's looking for a solution to the problem, not just the product. So I'm curious to know how much investment is being made in bringing companies together for multi-product solutions or how much is being invested in service offerings, that kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I would think we break I wasn't going to go there, but I'll try to be really brief. We break down the market into four different categories: product features, point solution, mini platforms, mega platforms. Mega platforms, the IBMs and the McAfee's and Symantec and all these large companies that are often buyers of venture backed companies, right? We talked about the feature earlier. A point solution, you know, is exactly what it is. It does something really, really well, and you can grow a big company doing one thing. But ultimately, the holy grail for how we think about security investing is this mini platform category. And we kind of define a mini platform by a company that's solving 3 to 5 unique problems that often represents 3 to 5 unique vendors in your environment or on your roadmap to bring into your environment. And, you know, and so this is a way to kind of help with some level of vendor consolidation. It helps with the people problem, you know, and it also just, you know, makes things way more efficient. You know, we kind of think that, like, in general, it doesn't have to be a hard rule, but 3 to 5 unique problems is kind of the amount of issues that a startup can probably potentially address at an earlier stage before a point solution or a feature starts encroaching on the company. Just because the adversary is moving so quickly, a startup can't boil the ocean and then too much. So, you know, that if you look at our portfolio construction, you'll find all of our companies either are a mini platform today or they have a clear roadmap for how they're going to become one. So, you know, we understand the pain that people go through with having too many vendors. And so we're trying to help a little bit with that vendor fatigue. You'll find a lot of venture companies hesitate to invest in services-oriented companies. And we actually made our first MSSP investment last year in a company called Scout, you know, that's focusing on SMB. And we think that, like, for instance, the SMB market is massively underserved for MSSPs. What's available is more of a compliance checkbox than actually managing enterprise risk. And so this company is focused on managing enterprise risk for companies between 30 and 3,000 people. You know, went right in the SMB space. And so, and that needs to be delivered as an enterprise software delivered as a service to the company. And so, you know, we won't hesitate to do that where it makes sense. But for the most part, you'll find the venture community, you know, they want to focus on investing in enterprise software because that scales. And, you know, and there's some edge cases probably where time to time we'll find VCs making these services investments, but I would say they're much more fewer and farther between.
Makes sense. And one final question to both of you before we wrap up is the area of consolidation, right? You mentioned companies, everything leads up to a consolidation or an acquisition or some type of exit. So on the consolidation point, I don't know that we've seen a lot. So what's your view on that? Should we have seen more, or are companies failing before they get acquired? And what do you expect on the consolidation front in the next year or so?
I mean, we're seeing tons of acquisitions happening. So, I mean, definitely okay. Companies do fail. But the buyer landscape is just much broader than ever, you know? So you used to think of, you know, half a dozen to a dozen main buyers in security, you know, those mega platforms are referring to, but, you know, you take like company like Microsoft, it's, you know, I don't know, over the past 18 months, it's bought $1 billion or more of security companies. I mean, one of our first exits was to Mimecast. As you think of an email company, now it's transformed itself to security. There's a lot of those big conglomerates that are making acquisitions. We just sold Cylance to BlackBerry. You know, as you think about a phone company, it's transformed itself. I mean, there's a lot of buyers out there. We're finding a lot of M&A. And so I think that the market is extremely active. We definitely wouldn't have a dedicated cybersecurity strategy if we didn't think that there were buyers. Most of the companies will get bought. The number of IPOs and public companies in security is very, very small. You know, I might get this slightly wrong. This is going to be directionally correct, but something only like 19% of all companies in the past 10 or 15 years in security exit for more than $250 million. So they're often getting bought, you know, earlier rather than later. So you might not see a lot of the headline acquisition prices going on, but from some of the bigger public companies, because they're not required to report it. Because it's just kind of under the radar, you know, because it's a smaller acquisition for them. Hence also why from an investor perspective, you need to get in earlier to be able to get the return profile you're looking for. But getting in earlier also for us allows us to be able to shape the company and really work with the company and influence it and, you know, bring real differentiated value to the company that can actually be absorbed and integrated and consumed versus something that's kind of later stage that all the direction's already been set. But I would say that there's been a lot of activity in the cyberspace, at least from our viewpoint, and we think that will continue to be the case. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a dedicated cyber fund. Particularly, we wouldn't have a $300 million one of that size if we didn't feel that there are a lot of buyers out there.
That makes sense, and it certainly does, given your point on the number of product feature companies that are out there. Well, listen, guys, it's been great. I'm sure I could keep going for another hour, but we don't have an hour. So I'd like to wrap up with maybe a final thought from each of you, either a tip or trick for a small company looking to get some help from a fund or anything about the market that you want to share that you think our audience would like to hear. Jay, we'll start with you.
We spend a lot of our time talking to CIOs and CISOs and security leaders of, you know, corporations and, helping them think through what their needs are. I would say we're available. Email us anytime, you know, we'll get back with you. We're happy to try to help. And also in turn, love to get some of your thoughts, you know, as well, if there are areas that we can help with, you know, we look at those as opportunities to go and invest. So, I just kind of offer up our services and we founded the firm on helping people like that. And we're big believers in what goes around comes around. So, I'd say that's probably the best thing I can offer.
I'll offer some advice. And let's say, Miller, this is for CISO thinking about what to invest in. Don't go chasing shadowy ninjas. In other words, don't focus on the APT and the other crazy threats that are out there until you've got all the basics in place. I'm very much a focus on the basics type of a person. Make sure you have your identity management straightened out. Make sure you have malware straightened out, et cetera. So basically focus on focus your investment portfolio on companies that actually materially make a difference in reducing incidents, and don't get pulled aside by some of the flashier companies out there trying to protect you against APTs unless you've already done all that other stuff.
Kind of the 80-20 rule. Manage the risk, reduce the exposure, be prepared to respond for the most part.
Bingo.
Love it. Well, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Really good insight here, of course. Expected nothing less from the two of you. And hopefully we can catch up again soon and hear about more of what's going on and maybe even dig into some of your portfolio and some of the things you're seeing on that front. So, Jay, Patrick, thanks for joining me.
Great. Thanks for having us.